What are the key objectives of multinational companies? Of course, to locate production facilities where they have advantages, whether it is cost advantage, raw material advantage, efficiency advantage, and then align themselves to the local requirements, eventually produce, sell domestically or all over the globe, and try to get a higher return on investment versus operating only in their country of origin. For example, when we were talking about the top 10 MNCs, if a Shell was operating only in UK and not elsewhere, would their return on investment be as high as what it is today? Or if an Apple or an Amazon was only operating in their country of origin, would they be where they are today in terms of scale and profits and all the other elements? So the objectives are, of course, to yes, trade globally, operate globally, but with an eye on your bottom line as well. Now, among these advantages, there are risks which have to be taken. So whenever anyone is looking at international expansion, a lot of these risks have to be taken into account, whether it's currency risk, country risk, acceptability risk, cultural risk, and these have to be monitored and controlled. Technological advancements have to be kept in sight and kept pace with. And also, if changes are required from a point of view in terms of monitoring something that's not working, make those changes. So we have MNCs who have come in, faced resistance for some aspect or issue or the other, and then rectified and aligned themselves to the local requirement and managed to move forward and move past that and still generate a higher ROI. Now, these are some of the advantages to consumers. You have more options, you have a better variety, maybe cost effectiveness to the company. You have better use of capital, cheaper labor, R&D, overall development, technological upgradations. So you have there are a lot of benefits of MNCs both from to the consumers and to the company, but keep in mind that there are a lot of local requirements, local specifics which have to be kept sight with. For example, in Japan, when one would think that everyone's consuming, everyone wants smaller phones and smaller screens and smaller tablets. For the longest time, Japan could stave off competition because there was a local preference to have larger screens and hence preference towards a desktop versus the smaller screens, Whereas in the US, there is a preference towards smaller mobile screens, or there was a preference, I'm talking about in the initial phase. So for a long time, Japan could actually stave off the entry of MNCs because of local requirements and tastes which were different. Likewise, in China. In China, people prefer WeChat to Facebook, or they prefer Baidu to their Google. So very often MNCs, while they have all these benefits and advantages, they have to keep sight of local tastes, local cultures, local there could be local regulatory requirements which an MNC is not best equipped to respond to. For example, in China, there are some sites where for verification, people have to actually hold up their government-provided ID to verify themselves. Now, that's not easy for an MNC to adopt versus local businesses who can adopt that. So there could be various local advantages which an MNC cannot immediately or even over a period of time be able to deal with, and they may have to get into some sort of partnership or the other with someone else who's better equipped to respond to those if possible. While there are all these benefits, there are negative aspects also. In the recent past, there has been a massive strike at the Samsung plant, and reason being that there is some issues with the new labor union. There are issues with elements of people claiming discrimination when it comes to working, best practices for working environment, and not just at this strike and facility. A lot of other MNCs have been plagued with claims that they do not provide consistent overtime across countries. For example, a certain company pays their Filipino employees in the Philippines overtime, but that same company, having employees in India, does not pay overtime here. So MNCs can very often overlook these healthy work practices, which are important. They can end up sometimes, a lot of times, pollution is an issue. For example, the Niger River in the African part of the world is claimed to have been polluted very heavily because of industrialization and production in those regions. Now, in India, also in the Mathura region, we have had protests in the in the Mathura, Varanasi, etc. region. We have had protests and allegations where water has been contaminated, or excessive use of water has gone towards manufacturing facilities of certain MNCs versus being accessible to the local population. So the problems could be several in terms of economic aspects, or degradation of natural resources, or labor issue aspects, which are part and parcel of doing business, which are part and parcel of multinational companies operating and are faced across the globe. Now, sometimes there are problems in terms of intellectual property rights. Sometimes there are issues in terms of, okay, you're making profits in our country, but all of the money is actually going back towards your own country, and you're not actually benefiting our country in any way that over and above the production facility that you have. So there are various elements which come into the picture, regulatory aspects. From time to time, certain countries and regions have taken stringent action against MNCs also, where they feel that an MNC has not acted ethically or acted in a proper way. For example, in 2017, the European Commission fined Google £2.4 million, and the reason for this was that they felt that in Google search results, Google favored their own Google shopping versus other options, which they felt was unfair. So they were fined. Likewise, the FTC fined Google another $2.5 million, where they believed that Apple circumvented certain privacy norms and tried to gather more data than was from the consumers. So MNCs have to deal with the downside also, and then be prepared that they would have to bear the cost of these should they be taken to task. Talking about Indian MNCs, across industries, we are seeing petroleum, banking, automobiles, textiles, etc. These are the eight companies in the Fortune 500 list for 2023, the list that we saw, where in the top 10 you had Apple, Amazon, Saudi Aramco, etc. So these Shell, all of those. So these are Indian companies that have made it to the Fortune 500 list. And again, these are operating across international borders. If you go to Dubai, if any of you have been to Dubai, you will see huge logos of Indian banks, Indian public sector banks, which have a very large presence there. So you would, maybe someone would be surprised and say, "Oh my God, what are they doing here?" But they have huge business operations, because obviously you have so many NRIs out there. So don't assume that just because it's a financial sector you think of it as a domestic organization, do not assume that it doesn't have very large operations elsewhere. So these are some of the Indian MNCs which have made it to the Fortune 500 list. We have referred to the 1991 liberalization for in several instances, but really the growth post that was phenomenal, be it the deregularization of having a very well-regulated financial services sector or a very well-regulated and flourishing telecom sector. Across the board, there was a huge benefit to the whole country. The import and export restrictions were lifted, except on a few sectors like chit funds or parts of defense or atomic energy, etc. Barring a few of these sensitive negative list, a large part of your restrictions were lifted. Your currency was made partially convertible. The Foreign Exchange Management Act replaced the FERA, which was the Foreign Exchange Regulation Act, which was considered excessively restrictive. And in terms of FDI, we have in banking sector, 100% FDI is permitted. And when it comes to your insurance and your some of the other sectors, you have 74% FDI permitted. So you have a lot of opening up which happened across the board, which benefited the consumers and the country significantly. Now, over and above liberalization, which is of course 30, 35 years old, on a regular basis, to give a push to Indian MNCs, the government takes a lot of initiatives. There are production-linked incentive schemes. For example, for the automotive industry, there is a 26,000 crore incentive, which is there for electrical and hydrogen fuel vehicles, which is the EV vehicles, which is a growing trend globally. And interestingly, I was seeing some data, and which never fails to surprise. UP, Uttar Pradesh, is becoming one of the largest consumers of EV vehicles versus other parts of the country. So, in terms of demand, not just domestically but internationally, you never know where the appetite is and where it is coming from. And so all these incentives give a massive push to various sectors. Then you also have another 10,000 crore scheme which is there for advanced battery storage technologies, etc. So going forward, when we're talking about digitalization, of course, technological digitalization, but also EVs, etc., in the direction of not just from a costing point of view, but also from an environmental point of view, all of these things are going to assume importance. Now, in this era of free trade regimes, we have so many FTAs that we've signed. We'll be getting into it in further detail. India is becoming more and more attractive, and even a country like Switzerland, which has just about 0.7% of its trade happening with India up to now, is in the process of signing an FTA, after which almost 95% of Swiss products will be accessible to the Indian market. So everyone wants to enter India. Everyone wants to have access to the Indian population, and India becomes very, very attractive for MNCs coming in. And domestically, of course, the Indian government giving a push to Indian companies so that they can be successful MNCs elsewhere. Now, I have been talking about various different structures and forms in which MNCs or foreign investment could participate in India. Now, Walmart, while we do not see Walmart stores under the name Walmart, but Walmart acquired Flipkart, and in through that route, an investment of 1.6 investment of 16 billion was made, and that is how that is like the largest acquisition involving an Indian company, and in 2018, and that is how their presence, Walmart's presence, is coming into India. Now, another example is Modern Foods. So, Modern Foods, which is their breads, etc. Now, Modern Foods is very, very popular in the southern part of the country. In South India, it is very, very popular. And their breads, etc., they are available in almost 70,000 outlets. And Everstone of Singapore owns 100% in Modern Foods. So while people consuming the breads of Modern Foods across, you know, purchasing across the 70,000 outlets in South India may not even realize that Modern Foods is actually a 100% subsidiary of Everstone Singapore. So you could have 100% subsidiaries, you could have joint ventures. There are various structures in which you could come in and participate in your in business in a certain country and operate in a certain country. When it comes to MNCs, clearly, there is a very strong case for multinationals, both Indian multinationals internationally and international multinationals operating in India. And international trade cannot be possible without the presence of these. We have, other than a few countries which are closed and, believe in protection, excessive protectionism, the world is operating in this free market environment or a mixed environment where it is a larger part free with the government participating to an enabling extent. And this is leading to, this is vital for global trade and for consumers across the globe, benefiting from the consumption cycle, employment cycle, lifestyle cycle. Having said this, we have to keep in mind that governments across the world are very sensitive to MNCs, how they operate, are they getting any undue advantage or benefit? And I have mentioned examples, but we also have examples where Intel was also fined more than $1 billion by European Commission because they felt that they were operating in a way where they made it difficult for competing chips to be attractive. So you have countries and governments very closely monitoring how MNCs operate. Are the benefits exploitative, or are the benefits in a way where they are benefiting across the board? In a lot of the developing or poorer nations, you would find a lot more examples and cases where there is a lot more damaging impact of multinational corporations, be it from a labor exploitation point of view, be it from an environmental point of view. I've already given you a lot of examples of cases where even in India, we are seeing strikes at plants of multinational corporations where labor is claiming unfair practices, where they are not given a very healthy working environment, where they are they feel they are not treated at par with the international workforce in other countries, where in other countries they may have various other benefits, whether it is health benefits, medical benefits, overtime, leave, etc. In India, there are strikes where there are claims that their working conditions are not very conducive and not at par with working conditions of laborers for the same company, laborers for the same company in other parts of the world. And all of these things are things which governments monitor. Over and above governments monitor, these things have a strong impact on the international reputation of the company. And these days, the media is very active. Even if not media, you have social media. So these things are not hidden and reach all over and have to be kept in sight as far as multinational operations are concerned. We had some very unfortunate incidents a few years ago when the northern part of the country, a few management, human resources management employees were lynched and, murdered by irate employees because of certain hostilities which were happening, which were going on. So clearly, it was a situation which got out of hand, where a multinational probably did not, address the situation when it should have in the best possible way that it should have. We are familiar with the unfortunate episode of Union Carbide and what happened in the Bhopal tragedy in India, and we know the long-lasting impact that had on, the local people and the country as a whole. And clearly, it is something which has internationally damaged the multinational company's reputation eternally. Even if anyone thinks, anyone anywhere in the world says Union Carbide for whatever they may have done in the past, I don't think anyone can think of them without thinking of the, Bhopal tragedy which happened. So while multinational companies are a very integral backbone of international trade across the world and have a lot to contribute to in terms of poverty alleviation, growth, standard of living going up, at the same time, it has to, this business has to be conducted in a very balanced manner. Bottom line and revenue cannot be the only criteria. And it is a combination of governments and managements together which have to ensure that this growth is happening in a balanced manner. Thank you.